pretty much the burn of every year. Related to target, asked by Honorable Stephen, and decreasing and the budget increasing, and the management of that theft and the realistic targeting of that. It's quite a very difficult question indeed. In the sense that some of the targets set are not necessarily achieved in the same year that they've been accorded to. And this has resulted in the department taking a workshop and invited all provinces and did what we call the pipeline workshop. In that particular workshop, and I'm sure that DDG, PMU in waiting, or Moonlighting, we'll also expand on this because we have used some of the models that they've been using to outline the importance of pipeline planning. In our sector, it's more relevant than in any other sector because it's a construction sector. So the things that you want to do after 3 years in terms of your targets, you may need 3 years before you even start delivering on those things because of the processes involved. So this has resulted in a very, what I would call unrealistic targeting of units to be developed in a particular year because it's not a pipeline plan. And that's one challenge. So we are trying to encourage our colleagues across the board to adopt a pipeline approach and then be realistic when you put your targets. And then you find that in the business plans, for example, in that particular year, at times acquire lands a period of about 6 months, if not more. That's the period. Therefore, you can't say buying this land, therefore in this year we'll develop this unit. And then that becomes unrealistic. Then the whole business plan is mismatched. I think that's where the challenge is here. We are trying to change that particular approach. That's why we had a workshop I've made reference to say, let us focus on this. You can't thumbsuck the construction sector because you've got tangibles that you deal with. And it's easy to measure what you do because it's unique. So it's easy to plan. But understand that if you want to buy land this year, understand the process, how long it's going to take, put relevant units you want to build, and also be realistic how long it's going to take, the procurement process, how long it's going to take, because you can alter the procurement process once you've concluded the process of buying land. So the pipeline can be for the period of 3 years just for one project. So that's where the challenge is. We've identified that, and we had a workshop. We invited different institutions to it to outline this, and as we deal with the investigation of our business plan for the next financial year, that will be one area where we'll focus. That's the first thing. One of the key functions of the PMU will be then to monitor every business plan in terms of its targeting. What's going to happen in this project, by when, by who, and deliver by when in terms of targets and the end process of that project. PMU will try to develop a dashboard that would reflect that in province A, we'll be dealing with 8,000 projects. These are the projects. These are ongoing projects. These are new projects. This is when we start, and then we monitor that. Yeah. That requires very comprehensive resources, and I said in the last meeting, this is why I'm saying, if you want us to manage 30 billion budget, allow us to resource this area to effectively manage that and make sure that we are not found wanting when we must account for it. I think that's what makes the targets to be huge, Chair, and we have identified that problem, and I think we'll be able to deal with it. So it's also linked into the whole issue of land acquisition process, which at times is a challenge. And prime land issue, I don't think, Chair, in this order one would like to enter into this area, but land issues are quite critical and quite sensitive as well because there are market issues linked into it. There's private sector involvement linked into it. And then it's a political issue as well associated with it. So it becomes very sensitive to deal with. I'm glad that there is a process from a rural development and land department to review the whole land issue. Because one of the challenges municipalities have been faced with, which are sympathetic to having been an accounting officer at that level, is that it's not easy to get prime land. That's one. It's a challenge. It's very expensive to start with. That's a challenge. Because most of the prime land that we have is normally in the private hands, near the cities and near towns. So it becomes a problem. But the second problem is to enter into public-private partnerships. is also another challenge. I mean, just for one partnership project, to get it done using the MFMA, which is Municipal Finance Management Act, you need 1 year, 2 months, just to conclude the process. Because this is where you can then leverage in terms of the services that you'll provide. This is where you must make concessions to the private owner in terms of developing the park infrastructure and using it for that. It's a very comprehensive process. And it delays implementation of accessing prime land within cities and towns in order to be able to do what you want to do from a human settlement point of view. So I think a review of a land issue is very critical. SDA mainly focuses on state-owned land, and they've been knocking on my office asking money to buy proper prime land which exists in various cities and towns. And I said, I don't have that authority from a legislative point of view. They said, do one man. I said, go and talk to the provinces and cities because they're able to do that. Then it becomes a to and fro issue as well to get prime land for the purposes of human settlement development. So it's a bigger challenge. It's not a very simplistic thing to deal with, but it's doable. It's manageable. Some provinces have been able to do that. Some municipalities have been able to use their systems to access prime land and enter into some negotiations, make some concessions with private sector people in prime land if access and human settlements is taking place. But it's not an easy one. The issue of accreditation, Chair, I will ask Neville to deal with that in terms of the having more municipalities accredited and yet capacity to spend remains the challenge. Because this is the crux of the question. And because the process, if I may just highlight one thing, the process is very comprehensive. A municipality does not sleep and wake up accredited. There are clear terms of reference, there are clear factors that must be taken cognizance of, but the most important challenge we've had, all that having been done in specific metros, for example, they're still underspending. Now, you don't get the value of that process at the end of the day when still we have done that but nothing happens. But as you know, there are many factors to that. In some instances, when the process concluded the following day, the manager is fired. And then the leadership is gone or suspended. There are leadership issues as well that play a role. I mean, institutional stability is critical. So you may find that capacity has been identified during the process of accrediting a particular metro. By the time the level is granted, the certificate is issued, there's been changes that have occurred which affect the stability of an institution. And then it affects all other things that you are doing, which you must have from the I don't know. Right now, within this sector, if I'm not mistaken, by next month, I should be sitting with 6 acting SODs in this department, in this sector. By next month. That's a possibility. Now, that affects institutional stability and continuity. Some is green pastures, some is things that they want to go and work within the sector but in a different environment. And in some industries, it's politics, administration, dichotomy, which I can't get into detail of that, but that's a reality. So I'm saying that affects, I'm saying this as in our sector, for example, as I'm saying, probably next month I'll be sitting 6 acting SOD. So you reinvent a capacity and it becomes a problem. At municipalities, even worse. The turnover of accounting officers is even worse. That creates a problem of leadership and stability. It then affects whatever you do on ground because when you act, you are acting. And your capacity to make decisions becomes a little bit of a challenge and so forth. I'm just highlighting what I think could be an issue with regard to accreditation. But the process, Chair, I know the member wants to speak, it's very tight, it's very independent before accreditation is granted to a specific municipality. But what happens thereafter and during it is another thing. The other issue...
Honourable Member, I think you have noted your question. Let the department give us responses, then we can make follow-up questions. So that we can be faster, please note the questions and we'll give you an opportunity to ask the question. DJ, you can continue.
Thank you. The red tape issue is a systemic problem. It's a systems problem, but also a capacity problem, particularly in the supply chain management area. Systemic in the sense that most municipalities, when we do bigger projects, I'll make an example of Cornubia. Honorable Bollmann, because you've also made more reference to it. Once the process concluded and the one tenderer decides to declare a dispute through court, everything comes into a standstill immediately. It has happened with Kwanobia. We have set targets, we've got phases, we've got people waiting to move, and one tenderer decided to stop. I think we lost about 8 months of our target process. It's a systemic problem in the sense that you can't say continue, you've been awarded when the matter is pending in court. This is a matter that we were also trying to get legislators to deal with. What happened in between? Because at any given moment, once an award has been made and somebody has decided to tender, everything remains until the court decision is made. And to expedite that, it becomes a long, protracted court process, parties coming together, preparing their argument and so forth. By the time they conclude on the matter, we have lost 6 to 8 months of your target, and the project then is stalled. Fortunately, I see it in most of these meetings, and I'm dealing with this issue for every week. I've decided to deal directly with the municipal manager on this one to say, please, let's find a mechanism to deal with this. There has to be a mechanism. Either develop a system where you can go, I don't know, to your own database when this has happened, find another mechanism to expedite that, because you can't arrest service delivery just because one tender. And in some instances, when they declare disputes, they are successful in court. That something did not go wrong during that process. Again, it's the capacity I was referring to earlier on from the supply chain management process. Because if you're dealing with a serious, big or small project, that process needs to be thoroughly managed up to its last leg. Anything that happens in between and the challenge happens and you are found wanting, you are gonna, that will be overruled by the court, and that will arrest the delivery of a particular project. So, again, it's a challenge of our red tape system. It's in the system. They're allowed to do so. It's a systemic problem. You can't run away from it right now. We've got to live with it. But I said to him, the targets you are setting are keep on shifting because of the challenges. So tighten up your supply chain management process. Make sure it's done. Make sure we have the right caliber of officials managing, especially for this project, because our targets are linked into this project. And the National Department is ring-fencing the budget for this project on an annual basis because of a cabinet decision as part of the infrastructure program of government. So any delay that happens here reflects negatively on our delivery on the ground, and it's one of the projects we want to see working effectively. So there's a right issue, it's a bit of a challenge. The last issue I may want to make reference to, Chair, is the sanitation and rig. Chair, I think one we'll have to come back to this committee once the decision has been taken, what's going to happen with the RIG program, whether it goes to the 62B, as suggested by the Committee on Appropriations, and that will again review our model for delivery. What we are presenting is a generic current situation. That may change depending on the outcome of that particular decision. But during the break, as I was discussing with some colleagues, that the challenge with the current situation is that as it stands right now, as per the proposal made by Treasury, ours is to monitor and evaluate what municipalities will be doing on the ground. Whatever, what they do on the ground, how they appoint contractors, what process they follow, what quality assurance they do, we only come to monitor and evaluate that. So we're not responsible for that design, but we're responsible for the implementation and the monitoring of that, which will create either a tension or a problem of implementation, because then the national must account when something did not happen on the ground, which is what you have been providing us with, that you are not delivering on the program. Put systems in place, put mechanisms in place, get additional capacity in place. Now we've done all of it, we are trying to improve. Then a new model comes in for us to deal with. So it's a bit of a challenge, but I think the position that the Committee on Appropriations took, if it's implemented, we'll have to come back and inform you how we intend to continue running this program. At least the budget for the next financial year, it's reasonable enough for us to be able to live with it. There won't be under expenditure on this program in the next financial year from the budget that we're getting of 106 million. But broadly speaking, Chair, we were given a mandate as DGs to come with a proper proposal about where sanitation as a function should be located, of which RIG is one component of it. We have met with the national DG to discuss the issue. I've made the proposal that the committee has made. It's in writing to him to express that this is what we want to see happening from a broader human settlement point of view. he could not agree on that. He said, let's meet with all other relevant DGs, which we're going to do, which is Water Affairs, which is COCTA as well, to say why is the best. Because the location right now, it's a bit cumbersome because we've got elements sitting elsewhere. We've got MIG sitting elsewhere with one element. We've got different grants managing the same function sitting in different parts. So we need a comprehensive master plan that will say, moving forward, where should this be properly located? And the legislative process be undertaken, and then the alignment of grants dealing with sanitation also take place. I think we've been affected by we met before the end of last year, so we are now planning, I'm driving that process of getting all the DGs now to deal this and come with a proposal to legislators that moving forward is how we think this should be done. From a funding perspective, from a location perspective in terms of the function itself, and an implementation protocol point of view, and the broader master plan as such. That's why we've also had a challenge with us when we say dry sanitation only for RIG, but there is a water component that also is linked to sanitation. It's very difficult to separate sanitation from water as one of your model of delivery. So dry sanitation does include water, and it's also in rural areas. So you only work with municipalities that are also in rural areas. But when things go wrong in urban areas and some municipalities, people look at human settlement. They don't look at whether it's in rural area or whatever. They don't care whether you have water as one of your elements or not, or whether you have a water act at your disposal or not. So we've got to come with a very comprehensive sanitation master plan that will address all these issues, including the funding component. Even if we proceed in the next financial year, we'll only focus on one week. That's the only program that was transferred to us, not the entire sanitation function. So that's how it is currently structured. So I think those are the high-level issues I felt I should attend to, and I will ask the CFO maybe to deal with specific slides that colleagues have made reference to, and the National Rectification Program will prepare a presentation to reflect how we intend to deal with it in the next financial year, take few steps backward to reflect what we have agreed upon, and moving forward how we intend to deal with the challenge. Maybe to say that acting appointments, Chair, we are trying by all means that I've reported to fill all vacancies, but much over where there is an acting person, including this Chawuge and other acting people in different branches. We are working hard, and again, we are trying to look people who have the relevant skills and competences for areas where they must go. We are not compromising that. He was just assisting to make sure that there is leadership and there is continuity, there is management. But I don't think he is a specialist person for sanitation-related work. We are busy forwarding that. I've been sitting in the interview, in the panel that was assessing various applications we have received for city sanitation as well, and many other cities in the department where they're acting people. So we're trying to expedite that process. As I've said earlier on, acting doesn't give one sufficient power to deliver on his or her mandate when you act. So we're trying to expedite that process. So I'll end there from my side and ask my colleagues to respond to some of the specific questions that have been raised. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. There was the issue of the accreditation. Chair, I think if you want to, we can come back to you and just give you an indication of what entails the accreditation process. What he says here. It's an intensive process. We undertake, when we do an assessment for accreditation as a national, there's an independent panel. It includes auditors. It includes a whole range of experts that go into a municipality and do an in-depth analysis of governance, administrative capacity, project management, the whole, the end-to-end analysis and evaluation. And once that happens, and once we're happy with that, it gets assessed and we make a recommendation. And we make a recommendation to the province. The province also does their own evaluation. And that's the process. So it's not something that is taken lightly because I think as you indicated, something that's quite in relation to the money issues. Chair, I think the issue here is that it's this conundrum that you know, you're going to have these capacity challenges at different periods. And what happens when you start something and there is a, you know, there's a break? I mean, good examples are Buffalo City. I always give the example of Buffalo City. Buffalo City, how many of us remember, achieved 2 VUNA awards for governance. They really did well. I mean, those of us that still have the memories available will know that Buffalo City was a shining example of a municipality. Msunduzi was one of the best. Msunduzi had great things going for it, and then the DG left. But those are things. So the thing is that what one needs to remember that you have these ebbs and flows. And I think in the development of any institution, there's an organic relation. We have to place our faith. You know, metros already have budgets. And the city of Cape Town's budget is 25 billion. If you don't even include the USDG and stuff, right? Itequini got a budget of what, 32 billion. Joburg got a budget of 30 billion. These are municipalities which I think we can confidently say do deliver on their mandates. And I think the one issue around which we're saying is we've got to be able to give them the responsibility. You know, it's a chicken and egg situation. And I think that's the issue. But what we need to remember is that those grant frameworks, and if you look at this year's grant framework, and I'll urge members, just the last point, I'll urge members, it's important that you go back and in the DORA, or the Division of Revenue, look at those grant frameworks, because those grant frameworks have been tightened to make sure that the money goes where we want it to. So I think it explains, I mean, we don't want communities to be suffering because someone can't take, or some individual can't do their job. It's that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just also add on the last comment made by the DDG in as far as the USDG, and I think that will also touch the issue of what more effort are we putting to ensure that we have a better performance moving forward. So I think, and I did indicate earlier on to say that we've actually come up with a performance metric that we actually, from the build environment land chairperson, just extract issues that are related to housing, and then we commit and actually respond to them specifically to the all the stakeholders. Chair, and for me, I've just as well respond to your question, Chair, as you were a member at that time, to say my apologies to the Chair, to say the understanding of the USDG. I think it is very important for us to understand what USDG is buying. I think at some point we're very clear to indicate to the Portfolio Committee what is it that we want to see USDG buying, and in terms of us providing a strategy moving forward and the turnaround to that. But to that effect, we can just as well keep on talking to that, because now we ourselves seem to forget. But the fact that we are bringing in some other mechanism and model for us to improve the reporting and the utilization of the USDG by our metros is very crucial to us. But I think it's also important just to indicate to the House technically to say that the way that USDG is coined in such a way that it supplements the investment. And that on its own takes away what we want as a human document to say, go and buy a house, go and buy land. They need to, we provide USDG and it gets to the capital budget of the municipalities and it maximizes the budget. But it's also crucial for us to actually identify today, this is exactly where we want the USD to buy, let alone that it improves the performance of capital budget of the metro to that effect. But we shall check, keep on pursuing and indicating to say, this is exactly where and how, in terms of the NDP, the SBDIP, as well as the BEP, as well as the performance, as a tool for us to report. Chair, the number of issues, if not comments, that have been raised by the members that are relating to the business plan. Chair, if you allow us, because the DDG strategy had indicated earlier to say just after the presentation of the strategic plan, we will come back and provide the members in the portfolio committee with the business plan. So those technical issues, those breakdown of
units that are needed by portfolio members, if members who agree, that we provide them, as we provide them with the details of the business plan per province, particularly from those specific areas, the issues of ratification, the issues of the block project. And I think the issue of the 606, what is it buying, in contrast to the figure that you indicated of a 3 billion from the research unit. And I think by that time, Chairperson, we will be ready, given the extracts from the business plan that we shall peruse. The business plans have not been signed yet. We still have to peruse them. Hence, I indicated earlier on that it is still a draft. So if the chair and the committee allows us, when we present the business plan, we will provide all the details, considering all the comments that the members have actually raised, including the issue of the 2 billion. Actually, like I said, there are a number of issues, and we've actually noted all of them, Chair. Chair, the issue of Northern Cape, and we also accept. Chair, I did indicate that we accept the fact that the Northern Cape is receiving a smaller allocation. But in my presentation, I also indicated that we are going to review as a sector the allocation formula that will actually look at how we fund Northern Cape. Chair, you'll also note that there are also economic conditions that affect the budget. And this also touches to the question raised by that demolo to say, what is it that we're doing to match the budget to the units that we are providing? You will notice that in terms of those economic conditions, the issue of the material prices that are increasing, they do have a material impact on the budget. The value of the budget decreases, although the amount and the figures do increase. The issue of the transportation costs, they do have an impact on the issue of the grant. So those issues, and bring in again the issue of the Northern Cape and the distances, those do have a drastic impact on the amount and the quality, if not the value of the money that is actually allocated. And it impacts on the end of the day the number of units that are introduced and the fact that they cannot actually reach out or the budget becomes overstretched to that effect. And I think the issue of the alignment, we will also look at it, but Mr. Bule has actually commented on that one. This has actually touched on the red tape, but we have dealt with some of the issues, and one of the technical specific issues that is issue of the red tape, just to add on what it is the issue of the fact that our provincial treasuries want to be part of supply chain management of provinces. And to that effect, they would want to sign for a certain amount, and with due respect to the issues that are actually being raised by provinces and their provincial treasurers, some of the things are under discussion, and I think treasury realizes, if not the provincial treasury realizes, that they are actually stretching the process of supply chain management. So that has been actually taken care of, and some of the provincial treasuries have actually been shifted away as signatories to some of the amounts that the provinces have to sign in terms of the bids and tenders that are there. Mama Jobe has raised the weaknesses of our communication strategies in as far as the COTA, Department of Local Government, and housing, in as far as the MIG is concerned, and that we acknowledge, Chairperson. And we have engaged with the department in as far as us aligning the MIG and other grants for that matter to the human settlement grant when the grant was actually announced or when it was proclaimed to be a human settlement. And I think those discussions are ongoing for us to be able to access the MIG. And then just to also explain the issue of the MIG and the difference between the rural household infrastructure grant and the MIG. The MIG is actually funding a number of bulk infrastructure generically. But when we look at the rural, it is specific to those rural areas and specific for sanitation in those particular areas. But I think it is fair for us to even provide perhaps a technical framework to this effect to say how do we as a human settlement stretch out to reach the MIG for it to actually assist the human settlement, particularly to those issues of bulk and link infrastructure. And for that matter, we are coming up with the issue of us, in a way, utilizing the USDG with Treasury is buying into it and extending the USDG to those areas. And I think somewhere, somehow, between the two, there will be some overstretch and understretch, and obviously the impact of the budget, the HSDG, will also follow the suit as well. Mrs. Bowman, the areas that I mentioned in as far as Treasury will and Treasury shall, I think I was trying to detect where you were leading to. But I think in my talking to National Treasury, it was about the issue of us deciding on how to move forward in terms of bulk and link infrastructure. And National Treasury has actually is assisting us on that matter. And they were the ones to suggest that if there's an addendum to be made, it should be made to the Housing Code and the Housing Act. So those are the issues that we are talking to National Treasury in as far as the budget for future is concerned, in contrast to the current situation. While we acknowledge that the current situation is still a challenge, because if we project projects, they still do not have bulk. Some of the projects will not actually kick start because of the bulk. But if it happens that during this financial year, those discussions and those the communication gets to at all of us agree, we will have adjustments, and then we will find ourselves prioritizing those projects from the HSDG to the bulk infrastructure. The issue of the census, again, it forms part of the fact that it does affect the budget and it affects the allocation formula, and I think we will also look at that in terms of us moving forward. I think I've tried to respond. Okay. The original chair raised the issue of the disaster. I think when we come back to the business plan presentation, we will indicate, because in this financial year, we're seeing the very 16.9 billion, the small amounts that are actually assigned to disaster funding. So we will provide a breakdown to the portfolio committee of number, if not eight provinces that have been provided with disaster funding in this financial year and added to that 16.9 billion. So the program, but in terms of the business plan, one may not see it because it is under ratification generally, but I think it's really fair for us to say so much has been actually given for disaster and it needs to be reported separately, and the number of projects that will be formed against those allocations for the disaster that we will technically provide to that. Yeah, Chair, I think I've tried to cover some of the technicality. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, you want to add? Okay, sure.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will provide the response to two questions. Firstly, the one in terms of the location of the land that has been assembled by the HDA. The department is busy consolidating a report which is going to provide the specific location of the land in terms of the provinces, districts, and towns, so that it will enable the portfolio to provide better oversight. And the second part of the second question was in terms of the enterprise architecture, what does this unit actually does? Part of the responsibilities of this unit is in terms of the governance of the department. This is the unit that provides the guidance, monitors the implementation of the annual performance plans quarterly. By the time we get to the annual performance, this unit would have collected the evidence from all the branches, did the validation, and also this is the unit that is responsible for the compilation of the annual report of the department. On a quarterly basis, in areas where the branches are not performing, this is the unit that is going to send the signals to the department to say these branches did not meet their targets and what are the corrective plans going forward. In a nutshell, these are part of the responsibilities of this unit. But lastly, let me also highlight that there is the Operations Performance Assessment Framework, which has been developed by the Department of Performance and Monitoring in the Presidency. So the responsibility of this unit in terms of our department is to ensure that there is alignment to that framework. Thank you, Chair.
If you don't mind, can you explain to us what is CIO?
CIO is the Chief Information Officer. The department has a responsibility to have, in terms of the law, the CIO designate, a person that is designated to deal with information-related issues in terms of the law. But the title for Mr. Baba is the Chief Director, I think ICT. But he's a CIO designate. But he's a Chief Director. So the post-executive Chief Director then the accounting officer has the responsibility to appoint a CIO designate in the structure. So that's how it is. One can explain it. So, but the abbreviation is Chief Information Officer.
So one other question that was raised by Honorable Bowman, that one of policies that are being drafted in the department. Can we get a clarity on that one?
Mr. Mopisa is here, but again, that will also form part of our business plan in terms of what specific programs we'll be doing this year. But Mr. Mopisa is here in charge of the area. Maybe we can respond to that.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. The last comprehensive policy that we've been having based on the old legal framework, the Housing Act, was signed off in 2009. What we call the housing code. It's in 7 volumes, and most of our work is supposed to enhance that and bring it up to speed with human settlement. And we have isolated those policies that will contribute to the outcome 8 and priority projects of government. And those policies. While we will come back with you with details, but I can just give an idea. These are the policies, for instance, fleet finance lead, fleet as it will come in state of the nation address. It will be the co-ops and the rental policies. These are part of the housing code. We'll also have the density policy in terms of determining the densities of towns and guiding the municipalities in their development. I can also think of some of the rural voucher schemes, which is also in the pipeline coming. These are some of the issues that we are expecting. We'll come back with you. The London standards is an effort that we have is at a very advanced stage. Will be guided by the DG on when to come to present this. It will also include a review of all our products and the costing of all our products. In terms of if we have produced this house specification in this area, how much will it cost? Work has already been done. This is the job that will be coming to report to. This will also indicate a house for disabled, as an example, some houses for specific military category of military veterans, and so on. And we also have to indicate that we are also taking into consideration those policies that are related to our agencies. That will also share our policies related to SRA, policies related to HDA, policies related to NHFC. So this will be a good example on policies related to some of our agencies. We cannot have it's a very long output. We expect to have an opportunity to present like we are presenting today. So these are some of the issues that are on our waiting. The accreditation framework is part of the work of the policy that we are coming with. How far have we developed the accreditation process? What challenges? How far have we gone? What achievements and so forth? So these are the issues that we will be dealing with as we go forward. We hope we'll get an opportunity to come back as the DG has indicated. These are not only the 10 ones that I have indicated now. I don't know that I can think of them. But we have a very long detail. And maybe those 7 volumes will go up to 10 after enhancements.
Thank you, Mr. Mapisa. Also remember that we have a deadline on that FDA issue. Honorable members, do you have a follow-up question? Honorable Duncan or Honorable Njove? Honorable Gloria Bowman. Thanks.
Chairperson, yes, I have the DG say, you know, or inform us about the acting positions, and I think I understand we can't keep officials away from finding better opportunities. However, I maybe just want to give an input to saying that keeping people in acting positions for, you know, 6 months, I know, because the Public Service Act, you can't act more than 6 months, so after 6 months, you have to do the process, if I'm correct. And if the person is appointed again for the next 6 months, it becomes a problem. So I'm just saying that in view of the fact that there's so many young people, we have 7 million young people unemployed, some of them, at least 2 million, do have experience, they also do have qualifications. that we don't unnecessarily keep these positions in acting positions. And then if a person has acted or is good enough to act, that is what I always said in the province, if they're good enough to act, then well, then we the department must make sure that if that person now not at the right position. You know, and I think you, I hope that DJ understands, I'm sure he understands what I mean. So please just guard against the fact that it is going to be an ongoing six months, and holding back an opportunity for somebody that is also looking for a job. Thank you.
So, yeah, thank you very much, Jefferson. I'm interested in this location of the rural household infrastructure grant or program. You know, the other day we just happened to be talking in the bar, conversing. I was talking to a colleague who is in the finance side of the colleges. I'm not quite sure which one, budget or whatever. And she mentioned that they had been discussing this rate. So I became interested as to what it is that they were discussing, you know, in that area, knowing that it belongs to my committee, Human Settlement. And she mentioned what you are saying, but with her, she actually said a rig is going to treasure. But I didn't want to follow that further because I had not heard it from my committee. Now, what I want to find out, I mean, this thought about transferring it at all, let's say to the treasury. My question is, if the treasury has got some ideas of how RIG can be improved, why don't they communicate those ideas to Human Settlement, help Human Settlement to develop so that it can perform its function towards RIG as treasury would have done it? Why do we have to take it away from Human Settlement? I find it difficult because when you build it, I don't know, of course sanitation is a broader problem than just building a toilet. But the question of the fact is that it starts from there. It starts from the house. Whether you're talking water or you are talking a toilet or whatever, it starts from the house. And to me, that belongs to the Human Settlement. Other connections can be made with other departments. So I just have those questions in my mind.
Honorable members, I'm mindful of time.
Yeah.
We have a sitting today at 2 o'clock. So if the department can respond to those questions that have been asked now and also summarize this document, the SONA document, as to how is the department responding to issues that relate to Human Settlement. Thanks. Sorry.
I know we're rushing against time, but last time when I got it in, I was also rushing against time. But just in the under the rectification, and this has not been mentioned here today, I think we need to also have a total picture, you know. NHBRC did a very thorough, at least I think it was a thorough investigation, and came up with an amount of something like 64 billion rand of rectification that needed to be done. Now, we've never heard any reference to that full amount again. They were taken off the project because they couldn't be the ones sort of finding the problems or fixing the problems. That would be, you know. But yesterday, the minister mentioned the figure of 58 billion rand. Now, when you come back, you don't even have to answer this today, please give us the total picture of what we are looking at. If it's billions, maybe it's 58 million, I don't know, but it's billions of rands that we're talking about. The other thing is very briefly, I'm a little confused in the concept of the strategic plans. We had a five-year plan, 2009 to 2014. We've had medium term. We've got apps. Now, I would imagine that what you're talking about with the business plans are those the annual performance plans that we're talking about, that we're coming back with. Because I want to try and trace back, you know, that's how we oversee. And quite frankly, I am totally confused as to where we are at the moment, because we get just all these individual presentations, but there's no nice big picture that we could say, all right, this is where we're at. And because of the restructuring in the big five-year strategic plan, I'm not terribly sure if that hasn't changed completely, you know, because of that. So please, just help me to understand that so that I can follow, you know, the progress that we are actually making and not talking about the same units all the time.
If you don't have questions, to some of the questions, you can package it, and when you come with the business plan, then you'll present to us. So a brief response to those questions and a brief summary of your responses to the SONA. Thanks.
Thanks. Chair, I would like the fundamental question asked by Member Bollmann to be attended. Did you strategy the contractualization of the process? I think that's very important, because can't miss that, because it's a statutory process as well. So it needs to be contextualized appropriately. And I'll leave that to the digital dealer. The RIC issue, it's correct. The way we have explained it is the concern that has been raised. We are waiting for the decision by legislators to decide where the location for RIC should be in the next financial year. We have presented it today in the manner in which Treasury has advised. I was quite frank, members in the committee which I attended, that there was no consultation with the department. There was no inquiry about what implementation strategy are we putting in place to improve on its performance. It was a proposal and it went into the estimate for consideration. So we wish then change the whole scenario of what we were planning to do for the last years of the RIC within human settlement, and then capture and encapsulate the recommendations that this committee has been making to us to consider and improve, especially on the side of the additional capacity and project management. I don't want to get into details. We all know we have been debating the service providers we have. Some are not doing things they should be doing. Some are getting money for things. There's no value for money in some areas. So we've been trying to improve on that. But they came with this. Now, I think their analysis is more financial than strategic. That's my personal view. They look into the numbers, they look into poor performance, then they make a decision. Now, the question was, are you going to be doing this throughout? Are you going to be moving this to another department? It doesn't work, then take it away, take it elsewhere. It becomes difficult and it's a sensitive issue. So you build capacity as well, build it, then take it away to another area. But I don't want to get into that detail, but that's how it has been. And we are more than ready as a department, I can confirm here, to manage the RIC program for the next financial year from a capacity point of view. We have developed the capacity, we have developed a model of implementation and the strategy to do that. I can assure you, and I can put my head on the block as an accounting officer, that if it remains with us for the next financial year, the amount allocated to it will be spent in the sanitation without fail. The issue, Chair, about ratification, that's precisely the reason why we have taken the decision to have a national ratification program, so that we sing from one page, we sing this song using the same tune, understanding the content in terms of numbers and where, by who, and what happens to service providers are responsible for this, how much work on a correct figure, because we've been getting two different figures. The figure that the minister was making reference to does also exist from assessment done. But we want to coordinate this from one central point of view for the country and for the sector. When we come back to this committee, we'll give you a comprehensive overview of how as a department we want to move forward dealing with the issue of rectification, which areas are seriously affected, what is our approach, what is our budget, how do we reduce, and what measures are we putting in place to avoid this from happening as we have discussed this. So we'll give you a very comprehensive overview when we come back and the exact figure. For that. The reason why we have been avoiding putting numbers is because we wanted to make sure assessments have been done throughout the country. We know from all 9 provinces what is the status quo of rectification, what challenges do we have in which specific projects, and how do we approach those projects moving forward. We will give that very comprehensive presentation. Neville, maybe the last question before I go into the zone quickly as requested by the Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Chair. If you know that on an annual basis, once we presented the strat plan, we come back to you and the provincial business plan basically tells you the 16 billion, each province, this is how they're going to spend it, which program, which projects, what numbers. That's what we're talking about. So it gives you a comprehensive view of each province, what they will spend their money, which programs, and then we give you also the project list so that when you do your oversight, you can measure and ensure that it's consistent with the figures. So you've got the national business plan and then you've got 9 provincial business plans on an annual basis. The 5-year strategy is the one that we present to you now. It's the strategic plan. That's the 3-year strategy. Yeah. Okay.
DJ, the response to far?
Thank you, Chair. We have just highlighted, Chair, areas that were covered by the State President in his input on SONA. We have taken cognizance of the additional issues that have been raised by the chairperson before she left. The approach, Chair, I don't want to go into detail, you can read this, it's self-explanatory. The approach is to develop action plans on how we're dealing with these issues. One key highlight which the President has done in 2, if not 3 of his State of the Nation addresses is FLISP, which we're putting an action plan for you in terms of how in the next financial year we'll be addressing that. The most important one as well is the living conditions of mine workers and communities in traumatized mining towns, which I made the reference to when I was presenting on the start plan. We are also going to be giving an action plan of what's going to happen in those affected mining towns, by who and delivered. We're working with provinces who are affected in particular, which is Northwestern Free State and Mpumalanga to a certain degree. So those are here we've just given you the issues that have been raised. I think what should be the next thing is to give you now the action plan in terms of our business lens of what will be happening. When you also go into business plans for provinces, you'll see that some of these towns are affected and the budgets have already been set aside for this, as the National Treasury has also given us a budget to deal with this. The other issue, Chair, which is critical is mortgage fund, which again gave you a feedback and an action plan of how far have we gone to deal with that, which was also part of the State of the Nation address in terms of dealing with the private sector and assisting government in those areas. I wouldn't like to read slide by slide, but those are the key areas, Chair. From here, we'll be giving you a plan from the National Development Plan. What role are we playing as a department to make sure that we become part of that core center trying to hold government accountable to its developmental point of view, and then we'll take it from there. This will be reflected clearly on our business plan at national level and also provincial level, because there are those linkages in dealing with those.
Thank you, DJ. I think there was a question of, even if it was not asked today, the service providers that were appointed to provide services for the right program. Yes. They appointed 6?
Yes, 6. They are all from the private sector companies.
Okay, we requested a list as this commission. If you don't have it today, then we can get it next time. So, honorable members, department, thank you very much for your participation in this meeting. Just to remind honorable members that we are having meetings that will be dealing with entities next 26th and 27th. So, no holidays, meetings. Thank you, everyone. See you in the house. Bye.
Yeah.
About